Views expressed on the following live program do not necessarily reflect those of KSCO Radio, its staff, management, or advertisers. If something is said with which you disagree, please call us during the program in order to help us balance comments.
Good afternoon, Santa Cruz. This is Richard Quigley stepping in for the United States Freedom Fighter Forum, another one of my little Thursday special things that I do here. Thanks to the generosity and good graces of the Zwirling family, their sponsors and friends and relatives and the like. I'm gonna take on popular opinion today. Big time in defense of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and I'm going to do that in just a couple minutes. I got a couple other things to get out of the way first, but stand by, because I do not share the common opinion, the common attitude about the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and what they did. I actually read the decision, which I think puts me way ahead of the media. How those folks can hold the opinions they do without sitting down to read is beyond me. So there's a fundraiser for the Skills Center, Santa Cruz Skills Center, and all I'm really authorized to talk about because of the way it's set up is that they are having a fundraiser. They can use the money. This is the Santa Cruz Skills Center, and you can call Carolyn at 476-6568, extension 122. That's 476-6568, extension 122, and get the details. And that's all I can really talk about. And Sunday, it's going to be the Ghost Mountain Riders' last days of summer run. And it looks like this year there ain't going to be rain. That's going to be real sweet. So all you folks that like to get in a wad of Harleys and ride out there with one another through the sunshine and play that poker and eat the meals and do whatever else we all do when we're on those trips. Sunday, they're going to be meeting up at, as usual, up in Felton. And I can't remember the name of the restaurant right now, but I guarantee you if you get to Felton, just follow the motorcycles. They're pretty easy to find. Noise levels off the scale. And we got a news release today from Gail Pellerin, elections manager for Santa Cruz County, one of the few bureaucrats, one of the few upper management bureaucrats. Well, maybe that's not right either. One of my favorite upper management bureaucrats that actually does earn her keep and more. What a wonderful lady she is. She wants to remind everybody that there's no reason to back off on getting ready for the special election on October 7th. For all that's going on and everything, according to this news release, says the original order issued Monday by three judges of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals was stayed for 7 days, at which time there'll be no further court action. If no further court action were taken, the election would have been postponed. And then I guess even I didn't see a modified order issued the next day, put an indefinite stay on the postponement, which means that unless there is some specific action taken by the Ninth or somebody else, the election will proceed as scheduled, as according to the news release. I don't know how that works out. I didn't get that far into it. I did my homework a little late on Tuesday to find out what was going on. By the way, this is a talk radio show. If you're inclined to call up, criticize, comment, all that kind of stuff, call-in lines are 479-1080, 477-1340. You can fax me at 475-2967. And with your input, I for all those folks that are going to come in the middle of this show, I'm sorry for them, because if you don't get it from the beginning, it's going to be a little hard to follow the subject matter, as you'll discover. Secondly, those of you that have to leave halfway through it, I can almost guarantee you that you will be disappointed, because the media is not talking about what I'm going to tell you about, but it is the heart of the opinion of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And I'll give you a little background. I happen to be a big fan of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. I know there's a lot of people out there like to label them and call them names and say all kinds of bad stuff about a most overturned court and blah, 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 blah. And quite frankly, by today's standards, they're no more overturned or upheld than any other court. The thing that I find interesting about the Ninth, and the reason that I like them, is that on those cases, in those cases where they're overturned, the decision that they've made has always been in favor of your rights and mine. It is like they are not overturned, and rarely, if ever, overturned, because they've given the government more power than the government's entitled to. It's the other way around. So any court that is willing to stand up and continually defend our constitutional rights deserves our respect and not our criticism. And quite frankly, I will credit all the media services with being complete jerks about this recall election. And those of you that think that their stay on that was a bad thing, I'm going to tell you, you're just not completely informed. And it's like I always say, why limit yourself by what you think you know? The election was not held up, I don't believe, by my reading of the case. And I actually read the case. It's 66 pages. It takes a while. And it helps if you have an understanding of law. I mean, you know, basic understanding. I'm not a lawyer, as most of you know. I'm just a regular guy that spent a lot of time in the law library. But in doing that, I found out some basics. One of them is that the court cannot answer a question they're not asked. The second thing is they cannot do anything they're not asked to do. They can't just take it upon themselves to head down one road or another. So that if a case is not properly presented to them, they are limited in their ability to deal with it. And that's only going to be important for you to know because of what I'm about to explain to you about that decision. So I guess we might as well get into it. When the criticism of the Ninth got so intense by the media and everybody just beating the hell out of them for being idiots and liberals and blah, 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 every bad name they could be put on them, I decided to go take a look at what was going on. And I went to findlaw.com. Findlaw.com is an excellent source for available information on court decisions throughout the United States. And they generally will have the opinions of these cases up the day they happen. You can go up there and find out before the news media knows. In fact, I'm pretty sure the news media is probably plugged into Find Law. In any case, when I got up there, all they had on this decision, and I heard it was a long decision, but all they had was this two-page, it looked almost like a clerk's summary. But on the second page of the clerk's summary, right after explaining that the importance of making the decision is that you can't unring an elections bell. That once these things are done, they're already done, so that they were forced to act as to the issues that were in front of them. And the second thing they pointed out was that the court had decided that as to the arguments against having to recall election, and the plaintiffs were the folks that were trying to get the recall election stopped, for the hanging chads and the education of people and all those stupid reasons that everybody says is the reasons they shut it down, but that's not what the case says. Anyway, I'm reading this brief summary, and it talks about how the court decided that as to the question of voting on the propositions, the balance of hardships tipped sharply in favor of granting relief for the plaintiffs. And as to the gubernatorial recall, the balance of hardships is a closer question, but in their judgment slightly favored the plaintiffs. And I looked at that a couple of times and said, what propositions? What proposition? I didn't know there were any propositions. I thought this was a recall and replace the governor election. What propositions? So I started looking around further on the internet, and I searched until I found the 66-page decision, and I commenced to begin to read. I'm going to tell you, 66 pages of legalese will tax the best of you. It definitely got to me, but along about page 58, it started to get interesting. What I discovered was that there were certain questions that weren't asked. And I, by the way, by page 58, I still hadn't heard a thing about propositions. It hadn't showed up. They'd explained about the hanging chads not really being a problem in California because all of the elections code in California deals with the elements that became a problem in Florida so that we could never be faced with those problems. Therefore, the Bush decision had no relevance, which is why I expect the Supreme Court won't come in because they would be running to them for validation of the Bush decision. But it doesn't apply because California covered all those confusing points in their elections code. But as I read through this, I ran into the following language. By the way, as the court went through, one of the things that they were asked to do was to call off the election in the name of public interest. So what the court did was they were going to call off the election. If they were going to deal with it, they were going to deal with it, this thing with the propositions, from the public interest aspect. And so they wrote the following. Some of it I'll paraphrase. Some of it will be an exact quote. And I'll try to make it clear when I'm inserting my own language. But what they wrote was, the case for postponing the election is even stronger with respect to the votes on Propositions 53 and 54. The two propositions on the special election ballot were originally scheduled to be placed on the ballot of the March 2004 election. Now, I would talk about Propositions 53 and 54, but they're not really relevant except in the fact that they're propositions. But they continued. Indeed, on July 15, 2002, more than a year ago, then Secretary of State Bill Jones issued and signed a certification placing the initiatives on the March 2nd, 2004 primary election ballot. In other words, it had already been decided that those were going to be voted on in March of 2004. Then it says the Lieutenant Governor's formal proclamation in order of July 24, 2003 called for a special election, quote, to determine whether or not Gray Davis, Governor of the State of California, shall be recalled, and if the majority vote on the question is to recall it, to elect a successor, end quote. No mention was made of the two initiatives. The proclamation was limited to holding an election on only two questions, recall and election of a successor. Now, here comes my favorite. This is the however comma. On July 25th, they wrote, 2003, the Secretary of State decided on his own to place the two initiatives on the special election ballot. Now, this is really important because they go on. There's no urgency in obtaining a public vote on the propositions. Proposition 53 would not take effect until 2006. Proposition 54 would not take effect until 2005. They continue, the Secretary of State has claimed that he was forced to set the vote on the initiatives at the time of the special election. But the constitutional language is disjunctive. In other words, it offers him a choice, requiring that the vote be set at a general election or a special election in the intervening period. If the drafters had wished to establish this as a mandatory requirement, this could have been easily accomplished by using appropriate language. Now, this is the first shot that they take at the Secretary of State. And it is going to become more important as this thing goes on, because you got to understand, the Secretary, the initiatives, the propositions were already on the March 2004 ballot. They were set to go then. It was the Secretary of State that included them with this recall. And what I'm going to get to, I'll give you a head start on it, is that they really did, they stopped the campaign, not because of hanging chads. They stopped the campaign because the initiatives were on the ballot. And I'm going to give you the language from their decision in a minute to prove that statement. But we'll get back to the fact that the Secretary of State, he claimed he was forced to put him on the ballot at that time. But then they walked through the fact that the California constitutional requirements established a long time interval before a vote on qualified initiatives, it could be put on the ballot. Under California election law, election officials are required to begin mailing ballot pamphlets no less than 40 days prior to the election. Now I'm reading from the opinion again. Next, the election officials are required to provide a copy of the final ballot pamphlet to the state printer 40 days before mailing is to commence. Now we're 80 days back from the election. And if you remember, the mandate was to put the recall election on in 60. So putting those ballots on has already violated California Elections Code, and they went even further than that because there's another 20 days added to that where a copy is to be given to the, before it goes to the printer. They're supposed to have 20 days for anybody that doesn't like the language of the pamphlet to come in and challenge it. And the court wrote, the Secretary of State's action in placing the propositions on the special election ballot caused election officials to violate these provisions of state law. Now, do you get what I'm saying? The Secretary of State submarined the recall election. The Secretary of State, Kevin Shelley, Democrat, Gray Davis supporter, submarined this election. He stuck a time bomb in there, a landmine in there, because he could not do what he did. And he forced all the election officials statewide to violate the provisions of law that say that you cannot put something on the ballot, a proposition, until 100 days before the election is actually supposed to take place. So the election laws of California not only do not require, The court wrote, the election laws of California not only do not require that the initiatives be placed on a special election ballot, the laws will be violated if they are placed on the ballot. The significance of this for our purposes is not to analyze the statutory violation for the purposes of remedying it. That is an issue of state law. Now, understand what I'm saying here. It goes back to what I said in the beginning. The court cannot answer questions it's not asked, and it cannot do things that are not requested. In other words, they couldn't simply just take the propositions off the ballot unless somebody had asked. They couldn't just take them off the ballot and go ahead and proceed with the election. So what they said was, rather, the relevant question is public interest in the present context. Public interest. You with me? Public interest is the issue. They are acting for public interest. Given the aims of the statutory framework, the public interest is clearly served by adherence to state election laws. Now, this is not language that is uncommon to the Ninth. Like I told you, they will always favor protecting the Constitution. They will always favor protecting your rights. When they are overturned, it is for going one step too far down that direction, not the opposite. So they conclude, and these words are dynamite. Thus, in considering the public interest in avoiding complying with California law, election law, the overwhelming factors favor granting the preliminary injunction as to the propositions. Indeed, requiring a vote on the initiatives at the special election would be antithetical to the public interest, in other words, contrary to the public interest. In spite of what you have heard on all the major media, in spite of what you have talked about among yourselves, in spite of what you may think, the reason that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals held up that election was because to have failed to do so would have been to ignore the public interest in having the election code obeyed. And they had no choice. They had no choice. Not only did they have no choice, but it is the right thing for them to have done. Now we got to go back and ask ourselves a couple of questions. One, did the Secretary of State do this to us on purpose, or is he a dunderhead? Maybe Jim's got that answer. He's calling in from Aptos. Jim, welcome to KSCO. Does this thing make sense to you?
Oh, let me tell you. Is this this is not a joke, right?
No, sir, this is not a joke. I know that you haven't heard one word about this on the media. But if you go read the decision, if you'll go get that 66 pages, I will spare you the first 57. You start reading at 58, and if you find me wrong about this, I'll be back here next week. You come on in and tear my head off.
Okay.
Is that not the most amazing thing you ever heard?
This is criminal.
Well, yeah, and they all but said that. And when they made their statement in the decision, I love the way they phrased it. It's very subtle. They said the significance of this for our purposes is not to analyze the statutory violation for the purpose of remedying it. They continued, this is an issue of state law. If that's not an invitation for the Attorney General.
That's what I read out of it. They've just said, hey, you better go arrest this guy.
Well,
we're not supposed to, but you should.
Yeah, or something. And he's only got two defenses. He's only got two reasons for doing what he's doing. One is that he did it on purpose because he loves Gray Davis and doesn't want anybody messing with him.
That makes him a criminal.
Yes, sir. And the other one is that he's stupid.
Then he should be taken out of office for
recall.
Incompetence.
Yeah, recall. Asked to resign. Now, I'm going to take a break, and I'll let, did you have something else you wanted to add besides your amazement?
No, I'm amazed.
Okay, Jim, thanks for the call.
Bye.
What we're going to do now is we're going to go ahead, and this is the time in the program where I try to demonstrate that I have some value to the station, and we'll run a couple, three commercials, and then I'll be back because there's another thing in this story that's going to prove interesting to you, something that I found out about as I continue to research it. And I got a feeling that you're going to have a little bit of fun with it. Now, I better find the right number. I think it's this one here, and we're off and... No, we're not running.
It specializes in business services. Whether you need a T1 or T3 or just a place to host your website, .NET has a solution to fit your needs. .NET offers server co-location and custom website development. We have e-commerce servers, streaming audio and video servers, and Cold Fusion and database servers available to handle your hosting needs. .NET understands that businesses rely on the Internet, and we work hard to assure fast, reliable service. Call .NET today at 460-2000. Food, shelter, clothing, net. .NET.
Where weekends never end.
Hi again, I'm Stella Doro with the special back-to-school edition of the Severino's Music Calendar. Every Thursday night, take a lesson on coolness with Ralston Brown and the Amazing Jazz Geezers. Swing at Severy's every Friday this month, beginning with Ron Kaplan on September 5th, the return of Wally's Cocktail Combo on the 12th, Midlife Crisis on the 19th, and Get Schooled by Martin Mann on September 26th. Rock and R&B are featured Saturday nights with Alligator on the 5th, Motown Express on the 13th, Plain James Band on the 20th, and Ron Watson September 27th. Severino's invites you to karaoke Sundays at 8:30 p.m. Don't forget happy hour every weekday from 4:30 to 6:30. And finally, it's football season. Get your pitchers at Fat Tire or Foster for only $9. You want class? We got it here at Severino's.
At the deep cliff end, where we can never end. Where we can never end.
If recent increases in your homeowner's insurance have you scratching your head in confusion, give Bedell Nelson Harbor Insurance a call. Hello, Scott Bedell here for the Bedell Nelson Harbor Insurance Agency and the Allied Insurance Company. You can always count on Bedell Nelson Harbor Insurance to do things right. And when it comes to homeowner's insurance, right means the low premiums and high dollar coverage of Allied Homeowner's Insurance. Bedell Nelson Harbor Insurance and the Allied Group. One agent, one company, and coverage you can trust. 426-3700. That's 426-3700.
I'm just overrunning with energy today. This is neat stuff. This is exciting stuff. I don't know if you folks find it exciting. I don't even know if you find it interesting. I'm assuming that you do because I'm not getting many calls, which means you want to listen, and that's good. For those that are just tuning in, I'll try to bring you up to speed. What I have done is discussed for the last 20 minutes or so what really happened with the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in their decision to hold up the recall election. And I'm gonna go back and touch it again gently for you. The language on this is so clear. By the way, it happened because the Secretary of State stuck two propositions on the ballot that had no business on the ballot because there has to be 100 days lead time for them to print and send out pamphlets and all that stuff. And I believe that the Secretary of State knew that, but you're welcome to reason whatever way you want. Whether he knew it, whether he's just stupid, it doesn't matter. We got the same problem. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals cannot, unless they are asked to, remove those from the ballot and proceed with the election. And with them there, they are committed to the public interest, and that means following the law, and that means they're not going to take them out. And I'll go back at the overwhelming factors favor granting the preliminary injunction as to the propositions. The election was called off because the overwhelming factors favor granting the preliminary injunction as to the propositions. It is not hanging chads. It is not uneducated voters. It is not any of that other crap that you're getting on the regular news services. People that don't read past page 45 of a 66-page opinion. Now, here's the other bugaboo. Oh, by the way, a note came in from Ben. Right on, Mr. Quigley. That's pretty nice, Ben. They hit you pretty hard again yesterday. I wish people wouldn't do that. Thank you, Ben. There's a lot of work went into this. And by the way, I didn't find out about any of this stuff until Tuesday night. Otherwise, quite frankly, I would have filed a petition myself yesterday because the cutoff was at 2 o'clock and I didn't have it together. I didn't have myself wrapped around the understanding in time to get the petition ready. But in my research, I did find something else that I thought you guys might like to know. Remember, I said the lieutenant governor called for the special election as to the recall and the replacement on the 24th of July. On the 25th of July, the Secretary of State decided on his own, those are the exact words that the court uses, decided on his own to place the initiatives on the special election ballot. On July 28th, there was a case filed in the Supreme Court of the state of California by an attorney by the name of John Eisenberg. Now, John Eisenberg, from his paperwork and from what I can find out about him, is a high-dollar lawyer. This is the kind of guy that whatever kind of lawyer work that he does, civil, criminal, whatever he does, he's a smart boy. And he got a couple offices. I mean, he's got some credentials. This guy's big-time lawyer. I'll bet he makes at least $300 to $500 an hour, maybe more. Anyway, on the 28th of July, he filed a petition for writ of mandate with the California Supreme Court as a pro in propria persona, which means representing himself. He didn't come in for the Democrats. He didn't come in for Republicans. He came in as a voter. And as a voter, he looked at the Secretary of State sticking those propositions on the ballot and said, hey, what is this? And he wrote this thing to the Supreme Court and says, look, there's a 100-day lead time that they're supposed to have on this, and this is all laid out in the state law, and he's got all the arguments in this brief, and I mean, he's talking about everything. It's almost as if the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals knew about it when they wrote their opinion, because when you read the opinion, you sit there and see the same reasoning in the Ninth's opinion as John wrote in his petition for writ of mandate to the Supreme Court. Anyway, he wanted this in, and he wanted it to be decided by the 13th of August. This is before the other case even got before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. If the Supreme Court, California, had heard this case, which they decided for whatever reason not to, they would have had to rule in favor of the law, which means the propositions would have been ordered off the ballot, which means when the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decided whether or not there was going to be a recall election, one of the considerations would not have been, do the propositions belong on the ballot? It wouldn't have been in the mix. And from what I read of their opinion, I do not then think that they would have stopped the election. So the Supreme Court doesn't do its job. And I talked to John. I called John Eisenberg to thank him on behalf of all Californians who stand to benefit from the government following the law, and told him how proud I was that there was a lawyer out there willing to do this on his own, for himself, at his own expense, and that I really appreciated the work that he had done. And I asked him why he thought that the state Supreme Court refused to hear the case. And he told me that he didn't know. I told him that I was a big fan of Ron George, the Chief Justice. And I feel very, very strongly and think very highly of him. I have for a long time, since before he had the job when he was an associate justice. I've talked to the guy a couple times on the phone. He's a real deal human being. And I don't understand. I will be writing him a letter, by the way, and tell him I do not understand why he didn't hear this Eisenberg case. Because Eisenberg could have solved all this problem. It could have been all taken care of. And we wouldn't have had this come out this way. We would have known what the Ninth would have done with the hanging chads and all the other stupid arguments that were in there. Now, personally, I believe that's what's going to happen, is that the election's going to proceed as recommended. I think what's going to happen is that the Ninth, somebody in the briefs that were filed yesterday, will come in and they will ask that the Ninth take out those two propositions. And so I want to explain to you what happens next. And Ben, I know you're out there, and I can't do it right now, partner. It'll break my train of thought. I appreciate it. I got to talk to you another time. Don't want to be rude. I just can't do it right now. See, I even got lost in my train doing that. The other thing that the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals pointed out was that by the Constitution, it's kind of as an odd fact they included earlier in the thing, that Article 2, Section 15, A of the state Constitution says that a recall election will be scheduled to take place within 60 to 80 days of the time that the petitions are certified. Under Article 2, Section 15B, if the things are certified within 180 days of the election, that it will go on the next general election, which would have meant that the recall would have been in March. As it's worked out, the court pointed out that I guess they were trying to justify what they were going to do somewhat by pointing out that if those votes had been certified 6 weeks later, that the election would have been in March in any case. Now, it doesn't change the fact that they weren't 6 weeks later, but that is what happens. And if anything happens to move this election from the October 7th date that we have now into that 180-day period between then and March, it will happen in March. So we got to keep our fingers crossed. The Pellerin news release indicates that they're still planning business as usual and everything's going ahead while the Ninth revisits this. I hope that when the Ninth comes back, because they're going to revisit it and they're going to issue a modified opinion, I hope they start with discussing the effect of those propositions on their decision, so that maybe if they say it first and they say it real slow, ABC, CBS, you know, New York Times, LA Times, everybody will get it. And they'll understand that there's a distinct possibility that the corruption in government in California is so pervasive that the Secretary of State actually moved individually as one guy to subvert the entire recall process, wiping out all the votes, changing the will of the people, the whole thing. And I think it's an outrage. The thing that pushes my button really more, I was sitting there listening to the news this morning, and they're sitting there talking. I mean, you can't, con men are so just, they got guts. The news reporters report that Kevin Shelley, your Secretary of State, Kevin Shelley, is pushing for the Ninth to reconsider this. And it's almost like, I know you can't reach that ball, kid. But go ahead and try. Go ahead and try. I got you good. You know, that kind of thing. I think he's trying to make himself look like he's uninvolved in what happened. But this decision makes it absolutely clear that he's not only involved, he's the instigator. The call-in lines, 479-1080, 477-1340. I'm ready now. You guys want to call in and tell me that you think I'm full of it, let's do that. If I've done anything that you're grateful to find out, I appreciate that. I'll be looking for your calls. In the meantime, I want to go back to Eisenberg just for a minute. The investigation on this for me was kind of fun. Once I discovered that this whole thing about the proposition is what queered the election and why the Ninth went the way they did, I started calling around to find out what was going on. And one of the questions that I wanted to know was if the court was asked to remove propositions from the ballot, if there was any precedent for them to do that. In other words, is there a way in law that it could be done, or was this sticking of these propositions on the ballot fatal to the recall? Because my next thing would have been, of course, to try to see if I could get in an amicus brief to ask the court the question, so they would have the ammunition to run with. Not that I think I'm all that damned important. I'm just, if I was paying attention and I noticed it, I do know how to write a brief. I was totally prepared to try to do that. Not for any other reason than to at least know whether or not they would go there if they had the chance. And so I called down and I was talking again. She is just a grand lady, Gail Pellerin. And I was talking to her to find out whether or not these things were, in fact, they could be taken off the ballot. And she told me that she thought there was some legal precedent, And she was the one that told me about this case by John Eisenberg. I just mentioned his name. Well, then I called the Supreme Court, and I said, okay, what is the deal on this? I mean, who is this guy Eisenberg? Who is he? And the first person I talked to didn't want to tell me. They went away kind of bitter and angry. And then I got a young man, and I asked him the question. He wanted to know why I wanted to know. And I told him I wanted to call him up and thank him for filing that case. And I wanted to get a copy of the brief. Well, he told me. And so then I called John's office. I wanted to have him on the show today. He couldn't make it because he had previous commitments. He was absolutely stunned. He hadn't read the opinion. He didn't know that the Ninth virtually, sided with him all the way through, almost word for word, in his brief. And he didn't understand why the Supreme Court did not move when he asked them to take that off. Okay, we're there. I'm going to grab Ben from Salinas. He's not going to give up on me today. Ben, welcome to KSCO. Be kind.
Well, first of all, I'm calling to congratulate you for being the astute gentleman that you are.
Well, thank you very much, man.
Just because we're on different sides of the political pole doesn't mean I disagree with you. When you're right, you're right. However, I did get on the phone with the Elections Department, and let me tell you what I was told.
You're talking Monterey County now.
Monterey County, right.
Okay.
They said, according to them, that the election, the three-member panel decision is going to be upheld, and that the 11-member panel is not going to overturn the decision, and that, so far as they're concerned, the election is not going to proceed forward. And also, if it proceeds forward, it's going to be invalidated by the state Supreme Court because they're cutting the voting polling places in half, and that is disenfranchising many voters in many communities. I don't know whether it's what the lines are, but when you cut on half the polling places, you're disenfranchising people that don't know how to go to vote. So that will invalidate the process. And you're also right on the 100-day margin on the adding of those propositions to allow for the wording.
Yeah.
So you have done your work very well, and the election committee, the word here is that the election is not going to be held. It'll probably be March 3rd. So the RNT, the Republican Nazi Party, is not going to get its way and get Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Nazi, in there.
Well,
however, they need to vote. You know who's the man for the job?
Ben, you were doing so good.
But you know who's the man for the job?
Yeah, I do. I know exactly who the man for the job is.
That's opposing Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, Tom McClintock.
There you go, and I agree.
Okay, my friend.
So you and I can agree, even though we're on opposite ends. And please, let's do everything to impeach Bush, and let's bring our troops home alive.
What a concept. That's another subject for another show. Ben,
thank you
very much for your call. I appreciate it. Paul was supposed to be on line one. He went away. Maybe he just came back. That's kind of interesting. The splitting the polls or splitting the election places and doing that kind of stuff. Are there more than one landmine built into this? I think we need to be diligent as hell right now. I think the fact that this particular subject is available and that this behavior has happened gives us reason to take a real close look at how we're running on this. You know, what are we doing? How's this thing working out? Is there going to be something else jump up and bite us that we weren't paying attention to? Because nobody's watching it in the major media. You tell me where you've heard that those propositions messed up the worst. You tell me where you've heard that anywhere else. Because I haven't heard it anywhere. And I'm talking about that includes Michael Savage. That includes all kinds of different people. And I ain't seen it. It tells me that Paul is on line one from Santa Cruz. Paul, welcome to KSCO.
Hey, Richard, how are you?
This is Paul.
Yes, sir.
Okay, you left for a minute. What can I help you with, sir?
Well, a couple quick things. First of all, I can't imagine any elections department told anyone that they know what any court is about to do.
I agree.
The fact is that no one has any idea what the circuit court will do or if it goes to the U.S. Supreme Court, whether it issues certiorari. I think you're right on. I've isolated the correct issue, and the legal remedy is available. The court, either court, certainly can pull some of the questions off the ballot and leave some of the questions on. They have the constitutional right to fashion any kind of remedy that will protect the voters' rights and uphold the law. So there's no problem.
Not if they're not asked. If they are not asked to take those propositions off the ballot, sir, I disagree that they can do it. They cannot do it unless they're asked. That would be exceeding their jurisdiction.
No, that's actually not correct. The court has the ability to fashion an equitable remedy as it sees, even if it's not political.
Well, you're breaking up real bad. You must be on a cell phone. I'm not absolutely certain on that, but that's my understanding of it, and that's the reason, the only reason that Well, whatever it was you're going to say, Paul, I appreciate your call, and I'm sorry that we lost connection, and I don't know what to do with Richard. You know, you disappointed me so bad last week, but I'm going to take another shot. Talk to me, Richard from Watsonville.
Disappointed you or educated you?
Well, yeah, it's always the same thing.
All right. All I want to know is, what do we do with the criminals?
What do you mean?
Well, obviously, Shelley's a criminal, right?
Well, that's up to the that is up to the Attorney General of the State of California to deal
with that. Wait a minute. Did he know the who?
That's up to the Attorney General of the State of California.
So there's another one. But the thing about Shelley is, the other day he was on TV really defending all this, big time. And I didn't even, it didn't dawn on me about the propositions.
Oh, no, he's working on both sides of his face, Richard. This guy is typical bureaucrat crook in the State of California.
So what do we do with him?
Well, it's a problem that has been laid out there, and it's up to the voters what they do.
Wait a minute, isn't there something the Ninth Circuit Court can do?
No, what they did was they laid it out that they haven't been asked that question, and they can't answer it. What they said was, the significance of this for our purposes is not to analyze the statutory violation for the purpose of remedying it. They have not been asked or authorized to do that. It says that is an issue of state law. So, yeah. Do you have the right to demand that your attorney general look into this and prosecute if necessary? Absolutely. And I favor doing that. I favor approaching Bill Lockyer to do that. Damn right. The man's trying to fix an election with that kind of nonsense. I don't know what the effect would be on the propositions, but I know what the effect was on the recall. And he has no right to do that.
He has no right.
He made the court wrote it right there. He caused the election officials across the state to violate the provisions of law that have to do with when you put propositions on the ballot.
What about Gray Davis?
I don't know whether he was involved or not. How do you tell?
Well, they're all on the same side.
I understand. That's what I'm saying is, how do you tell?
It's called teamwork.
How do you spot whether or not you can assume that it's that? But the thing about law in our country is that you're innocent until proven guilty, and proving a conspiracy that happens in closed rooms, back rooms, is always going to be impossible. That's why we need somebody like Tom McClintock up there with a big bright light to put the lights on the crooks, and then they'll be gone from there.
I don't think I'd go that far, but McClintock, you know, that's another joke. I'm with Hartman on that one.
Well, we'll
there's not enough Republican senators.
Richard, I'm not going to cut you off, but I'm going to let you go. But thank you very much for calling in. And we're winding down now. We got a minute left, half a minute. I don't have time to take any more calls. I hope that this has been an educational experience for you folks, that you have learned something from it, that I have been able to bring to you a perspective of what took place up there that will allow you, when people start bashing this court that works so hard to defend your rights, and the lawyers like John Eisenberg who step in and try to protect your rights, and that you will appreciate them in the future, and that you will do your best to see that those kind of people survive within our government. And with that, I'm done for the day. This is Richard Quigley, United States Freedom Fighter Forum on KSCO Radio 1080 Santa Cruz. Just going on 1 o'clock right now. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Michael. I'm out of here.